you know, I have become borderline deranged about the amount that I fixate on our mission, vision, and values. And I mean, you know, our mission is empowering people to achieve physical, personal, and professional excellence through entrepreneurial education. I do that on the basis of a vision. My I have a dream vision of the world is a world where an awesome life is achievable for anyone committed to excellence. And I have 10 core values that drive me toward that every day and that suffuse through my entire organization, and everybody knows them and everybody's expected to live them. And that's it, man. When you get life that simple, it does the number one thing to reduce friction in your life, which is it eliminates either the number of decisions that you have to make or the difficulty of the decisions you have to make. When you live mission, vision, and values, decisions get really easy.
Welcome to the Viral by Design podcast with Dave Rothero, where we get inside the minds of today's leading viral marketers as they reveal the exact strategies they use to build brands, products, and campaigns that are magnetic to customers, spread like wildfire, and seize the attention of millions. This is Viral by Design.
So welcome to another episode of Viral by Design. I'm extremely excited about our guest today. Jeff Lerner went from being a broke jazz musician to generating over $50 million in online sales. He also built a real estate investment company and founded the 2x Inc. 5000 digital agency. He went on to sell that in 2018 so that he could focus on showing other entrepreneurs the path. Showing other entrepreneurs how to build multi-million dollar businesses, how to acquire the right mindset, and all of those things that they don't teach you in business school. And most importantly, how to spend more time with his wife and four kids. Jeff describes himself as successfully unemployed since getting fired from his summer job at the age of 16. Jeff, you got out early, man.
Yeah, it didn't take me long to realize what I was cut out for and what I wasn't.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for giving us some time, and really excited to dig into your journey and learn a bit more about yourself.
Yeah, this is going to be wonderful. I'm excited. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. So first question, obviously I'm really keen to dig into this because I myself started out as a musician and then transitioned into entrepreneurship. So I'd love to learn about, I know you used to be a jazz pianist, right? And then you moved into entrepreneurship. So I'd love to hear about that journey, like what your music career was like and what it was that made you decide, right, enough's enough, entrepreneurship's my path.
Yeah, of course. So music for me was a very practical, tactical decision where I was 16 years old, and it was not coincidentally, it was right after I had gotten fired from that job. You know, the summer between my sophomore and junior year of high school, I got a summer job. It only took me 3 weeks to get fired, and which was two weeks and 6 days longer than I wanted it to, because I was miserable from day one, you know, so that happened. And then I, you know, had about a month before I went back to school. And so I went back to school, like I was very changed. I was like, wait, that's what having a job is? Well, here I'm, you know, I've been tracked all through, you know, since kindergarten. People have been talking about study hard, you know, graduate, get a job, have a great life. And I'm like, wait, that's what all this is for? What am I doing? And it just changed everything. So my junior year of high school, I literally, it was probably only a month, maybe 6 weeks into the semester, and I just had this palpable, unshakable feeling that like, this is a waste of my time. This whole school thing is a waste of my time because it's aiming for a target that I don't want to hit, and that I will literally be like depressed to the point of oblivion if I even did hit it. So it's like, I want whatever the other way is, that's where I want to go. So I dropped out of high school my junior year and I said, I'm going to be a musician. I was not at the time. I was not a serious musician. I was not, certainly not a professional level musician, but I knew from playing some guitar at an earlier age that I had an aptitude for it. I felt like it was something I could do that I would be a quick study at, and that I could develop enough skills that I could have what I really wanted, which was the ability to make a living while still controlling my own time anywhere in the world. At the time, I was like, I want to learn how to do something that I could do here in Houston, Texas, where I'm from, or that I could go do in, you know, Mumbai, India, if I wanted to. Like wherever you go, there's always going to be a demand for musicians if they're good, right? So I started working really hard on ear training. I started working really hard on music theory. Like I wanted to be a really good musician, not just like, oh yeah, I can play the entire Beatles catalog. I mean, I had this like obsessive vision of like being able to play, you know, if somebody said like, here's a piece by the Mahavishnu Orchestra, now play it in all 12 keys. And if you're not a musician, you have no idea what I just said. But if you are, you're like, well, yeah, that would be like the ultimate level of mental acuity with music. And I just was obsessed with because I didn't have the technique. I was a pianist who started at 17. So my hands were never going to be the fastest, but I could get, I thought I could get my mind the sharpest. And so I made flashcards. I bought books, home study books. I started teaching myself chord changes and music theory. And eventually it took 3 years. I was able to get into college on a music scholarship, even though I had not finished high school, just because I demonstrated a lot of aptitude with music. And it took me 10 years to graduate. But the whole time I was in school, I really was just there for the free education. I got a scholarship into the jazz orchestra. So as long as I showed up 5 days a week from 12 to 1 and did, you know, two concerts a semester in the jazz orchestra, I got school paid for. So I wasn't having to do that, what I consider to be for most people, very ill-conceived or at least questionable trade of a lot of debt in exchange for an education. Like, I didn't have to do that, which I'm clear about that, because people be like, wait, you went to college? I thought you say not everybody needs to go to college. It's like, yeah, but I didn't have to pay for it. And for me as a musician, there was a ton of networking through college because all the professors were also working musicians. So I ended up getting most of my gigs through those relationships. So it made a lot of sense for me. But then all through my 20s, I realized that I had a thing that I loved and a thing that I didn't love. The thing that I loved was I got to be creative. I got to choose my own schedule. I got to say yes to the jobs I wanted to do and no to the jobs that I didn't want to do. I got to constantly challenge myself and grow. I got to be around world-class experts at their craft that had decades of experience on me and would push me to get better and better. But the other thing I had that I didn't like was I was poor. I was just poor. Working musicians for the most part are just really poor. And I had very little personal life to speak of. I tried twice in my 20s to get married. Both times it didn't work out, which is no surprise because I was never home. When I was home, I came home at 5 a.m. smelling like smoke and, you know, drinks, and maybe somebody threw up on me at the bar. I did dueling pianos. I did nightclub piano work. It's just the musician life is hard. And I was trying to go to school during the day. And so anyway, I ultimately realized I wanted to keep the freedom, but I needed to make more money. That's it in a nutshell. By my late 20s, I had started 10 different businesses trying to make it work, and they all failed. My 10th and final failure was, well, I guess you never really have your final failure, right? Your final failure is called your funeral. But my 10th failure was these two franchise restaurants that I had invested over $400,000 in back in 2006, 2007, when the American banks were being idiots and they would give a kid like me way more money than he should be able to borrow. And it gave me too much rope and I tried to hang myself with it. I opened these two restaurants in the Great Recession, closed them. I was $495,000 in debt. And that's when I went online. I started learning digital marketing. I started with affiliate marketing. And I don't know how much of the story you want me to tell, but that's when things really turned around.
That's awesome, man. Like, hell of a journey, right? Now, one thing that's really interesting that you mentioned there is your obsessive personality towards music. And I understand this, having been trained as a classical musician too, right? There's a culture of being obsessive, of having to be the best, of having to be able to play pieces in every single key, et cetera, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think you've taken from musicianship into entrepreneurship, and what served you, and what have you had to kind of to cut away from that mentality?
I have taken almost everything about the actual practice and trade of music into being an entrepreneur. The only thing that I've left behind, I would say, are some negative, and this is a very broad stroke, so forgive me, especially all my old musician friends, forgive me. But at the same time, I make no apologies. I would say this, let's say I worked with, consistently over the course of my 20s, I worked with 500 musicians on a regular basis, maybe more, maybe less. 90% of them had this sort of romantic view of music where, like, poverty is part of the struggle, is part of the nobility, it's part of the art form. In order to get rich, you would have to like sell out, or you'd have to go commercial, and those aren't serious musicians. And like, there's like this way that artists very often try to justify or rationalize the fact that they really are undervalued by society. And so they make that part of the ethos, when in reality, being poor and being an artist are two totally unrelated things that just happen to coexist in many cases. And so for me, like, I mean, selling out, that means your product was so good, you ran out, right? Like you want to be sold out of, you know, oh, we're out of, you know, we're out of this book. That's because it was a runaway bestseller. Like you want to sell out of your stuff. And so that was the part of my life that had to change from being an artist to an entrepreneur. But in terms of what I do every day, look, all I did was I swapped keyboards. I sit here at my computer keyboard and now I do real estate and I'm out and I speak. And well, when there's no COVID, I speak and I do more offline things too. But fundamentally, I'm a guy that will sit at his keyboard for 8, 10, 12, 14, 19 hours a day, whatever it takes, because I love the process. I love whatever the digital marketing equivalent is of playing Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier in all 12, in all preludes and fugues in all 12 keys, like whatever the super insane, thorny intellectual equivalent of that is in digital marketing, I have no problem tackling that because otherwise, what's the goal? To get dumber? No, to get smarter. I like the challenge. And I think I just approach business sometimes with a level of intellectual vigor that a lot of people, I think, want to stop themselves short of, because my guess is fundamentally they lack the confidence in themselves to be able to operate at that level. But I just think that that's usually a product of misinformation and bad, I don't know, bad rearing or something. Because I think anybody can do it if you just get excited about it.
That's huge, man. And, you know, I think so many people, there's so much opportunity out there, right? There's so much opportunity. And so many people at the same time fail or even fail to get started. So why do you think that is? Why do you think so many people fail?
Because they stop. I mean, failure is what happens when you quit, and fairness is what you think about when you accept defeat. Like, these are only concepts that exist insofar as we give them power by confusing our present for our reality. You know, in the moment, I can fail. I can describe my present as failure. But there's no way to describe my reality. I mean, it's a way bigger leap to describe my reality as failure. You know, there's a principle in physics that was at least eponymously popularized by the show Breaking Bad, although I'm not sure a lot of people necessarily know the source or why this is significant. But Heisenberg, you ever watch the show Breaking Bad?
Certainly did.
So, yeah, Heisenberg, right? So there's a concept that's at the core of quantum mechanics called the Heisenberg principle. And this may not be where you thought this conversation was going to go, but I'm going to share this anyways, because I literally think about this every single day. The Heisenberg principle says, and it's describing objects, you know, very tiny, like subatomic particles. It says it is impossible to measure both the location and the trajectory of a particle. So like when they're running like the electron colliders, the subatomic colliders, whatever, at CERN in Switzerland, for example, they can try to take a picture of a subatomic particle, but they can only from that picture assess the location or the direction or trajectory. They cannot quantify both, because as soon as you try to pin down one, the other changes. It's one of the, you know, natures of particle physics. That's us, man. That's us. You try to take a snapshot of your life and define your location, you disrupt your trajectory. However, you define your trajectory, you defy location. And so when people say I failed, are you talking about your location? Are you talking about your trajectory, or what I'm calling your reality? And you have to understand, I think it's rooted in the principles of nature that you cannot simultaneously assess both. And you just kind of got to decide what you're focused on. And for me, as long as you're focused on trajectory, location is irrelevant, because that's literally wired into nature.
It's incredible advice, man. Absolutely incredible advice. So in terms of people actually getting started, so say if somebody was in your position right now, so a musician like we were, and they wanted to find some kind of entrepreneurial path. With your experience now and your journey and having seen what you've seen, what would be the best path for them? What would be the best path for, so that either as a side hustle or for something which they could turn their music into a side hustle? Where should they get started?
Here's the thing, man. I don't know if I'm the best guy to ask that question, because I don't really like the idea. And this is this, like, it's a careful, I want to be careful what to differentiate between what I say and what I do. Like, I appreciate and respect people's desire to kind of juggle and balance and have, you know, like, oh, this is my job and this is my side hustle and this is my relationship and this is my hobby and this, like, that's just not how I'm made. I don't know how to do, I don't think I'm smart enough to do more than one thing at a time. Like I cannot pat my belly and, or rub my belly and pat my head. Like I got to pick one thing. So for me, if I'm in business, I'm all into business. It just is. And so I'm not really the guy to say like, oh, here's how to start a nice part-time side hustle. Although I totally logically recognize the value of doing so. So I'm only going to answer the question that I think I'm qualified to answer, which is if somebody wants to go big and create a, not just a little splash, but like a full on tsunami in this world, this is what you do. And that's why I say this with such conviction, because I literally put this theory to the test starting a little over 2 years ago. You know, for all the results I'd had, and you know, I'd had what I consider good results, and certainly monetarily they were solid results that, you know, I probably qualified for some award or some list or something, but like, I wasn't really happy. I wasn't really fulfilled. And about 2.5 years ago, when I was getting ready to sell my agency, I was like, you know, what am I going to do that's going to be the one thing? Like, I'm tired of changing and reinventing and frankly, what felt like playing small. I want to do something big. And my theory on the world is that, you know, I've seen enough Tai Lopez, I've seen enough Grant Cardone, I've listen to enough Gary Vee and enough Seth Godin to believe that awareness is currency, and that ultimately, you know, authority is leverage, is pricing power, is, you know, bulletproof position in the market, right? So like, I just need to build enough awareness and authority around something that I believe I offer a value. And if I commit all in on that, all the rest, it won't get easy, but it'll get doable, right? So a little over two years ago, September 2018, I made one video on my phone called Let's Get Extreme. And actually, if I roll the clock a little before that, I was on stage in an event, speaking at a marketing event, and I told the room, and I'll do it for you right now. Is this going to be on video? Are people going to see this?
Yeah.
On just YouTube. Audio. Okay. So I'm going to show you exactly what I did. I held up a selfie stick and a phone. And I said, with these two things and a very small budget, I'm going to go make millions of dollars. And it was a dare. It was a challenge. It was a pitch from stage to say, who wants to come with me? Because I believe there's a model now where if you do enough to create awareness with low production value, high content value, video marketing, you can create a base of awareness that allow you to sell anything you want, launch anything you want, scale anything you want, you know, essentially have the world at your fingertips. I believe it, and I'm gonna go out and prove it with my own money and my own time, because I just sold my agency and it's the only thing I want to do. So, of course, everybody in the crowd raised their hand. I want in. There were about, I don't know, maybe 80 to 100 people in the crowd. Of those, once I said the price, I don't know, 75% of the hands went down, but it ended up being about 20 people bought this program to follow me on this journey. And I called it the Social Media 10 Explosion Growth Formula. And of those 20, and all it was make a video every day. And I'm going to teach you how I'm doing the same thing and how I'm pushing those videos out to market in strategic, optimized ways to ultimately build a base of awareness and authority that will allow me, when I'm good and ready, to launch a business. And 20 people opted in. The only homework was make a video every day and then watch my update video in the Facebook group every day, because I'm chronicling my journey and I'm going to tell you what I'm learning along the way. That was the only homework. Out of 20 people, 21 counting myself, guess how many people were still creating videos after 90 days?
I'm going to hazard a guess at one or something crazy.
Yeah. This guy. He's got two thumbs and he's this guy. That was it, man. People just couldn't hack it. It was the easiest assignment ever, man. Just make a video every day. I said, the way it started was write a list of really meaningful, profound, but also relatable and even potentially mundane things that have happened to you in your life from which you can extract any sort of meaning, any sort of message, any sort of lesson. Just make a list of these things and every day shoot a video about one of them. So for me, it was like, I shot a video one day about like something happened to me when I bumped into my friend at the gym. That was the name of the video. The next one was like, how I tried to change my hater's mind by contributing to his GoFundMe or something. Like, these just like silly little things that I shot these videos about, right? But I did it. Here's the thing. I'm over 2 years in. I'm 1,000 videos deep, man. I just never stopped. And everybody else couldn't hack it. I did that for 10 months from September. And there's a strategy to it that I'm happy to share with your audience if it's the right fit for your audience and you want to go there. Because I did spend about $25,000 boosting the videos in a very strategic way. So again, I'm happy to talk about that. But the point was, I want to build as big an audience as possible of people who recognize me. And frankly, if I'd had more time, something happened in 2019 where all of a sudden I had some urgency, like, okay, I need to create a product and sell the product. But honestly, if that hadn't happened, I would have taken even more time. As it turned out, I only took about 10 or 11 months of that strategy, just purely building an audience with no sales pitch. I didn't even have a product to sell. The calls to action were always just like, comment, share, subscribe. I never, you know, said go into my funnel or whatever. I just wanted people to get to know me and decide if they liked me or not, and if they want to know more about what I had to say. And in 11 months, let's call it 11 months. I guess it wasn't even that. It was from September to June. So it's 10 months. I built an audience on Facebook of about 2 million people that had seen my videos. And I, you know, Facebook, you install a pixel and Facebook tells you that, right? And so June of 2019, I locked myself in this exact hotel room, which is one of the reasons I could still come to this room. It's the Salon Suite at the Wynn in Las Vegas. And I created a course called the Entre Blueprint. It took me 1 week to create the course. And you know, for purposes of a template, the point is just create a product, create anything that anchors back to your expertise, your awareness, your story, like anything that's it's kind of the expert secrets concept, like whatever's your unique thing, right? And I created a course and I launched that course and I started pushing that course hard and it optimized really, really quickly. Here's the key. I was able to optimize the funnel for that course so fast because I'd spent almost a year figuring out who my audience was, letting them self-select into my world and getting crystal clear on my avatar and my message by reading the feedback from my videos and seeing what videos got the best response. That by the time I created my course, I knew exactly who I was, I knew exactly who my audience was, and I knew exactly what they wanted from me. And I'd even started to develop a vocabulary that was, it was almost like my IP around here's how I do and say and sell what I do and say and sell. So that was 18 months ago. We've sold over 60,000 units of that course, and we've built what's, you know, on its way to being, I don't want to beat my chest and say the numbers, but it's a pretty ridiculously huge business with a $25,000 startup budget.
Yeah. That's amazing, man. Like, again, like what an incredible story. You know, the theme there of consistency that you're talking about, I'm sure like everybody listening to this can think about something if they stayed the course and something they committed to do, whether it be like a daily task, whether it be something like weight loss, fitness. Obviously, you know, you look after yourself as well, Jeff, so you've got this ingrained into everything you do. So in terms of consistency and like those 20 something people that ended up completely quitting and flipping out even after 10 days, why do you think people stop? Like, what is it that prevents them and how can they get around that? Is it self-sabotage? Are they trying to keep themselves committed to a lesser form of themselves? What is it, you think?
I think that I have a couple different facets to that answer. And trust me, I consider the question, that question itself quite obsessively because, you know, now I have 60,000 plus entrepreneurial students and not all of them end up in our, you know, advanced courses and whatever. But the reality is I have a large community of people that I am now actively and quite transparently trying to steer into success in entrepreneurship. So that's the single most important question in my life to answer, right? And I think that it's a variety of things. One, I think the internet has done a really unfortunate number on a lot of people's psychology, some of which is their own. They certainly gave permission for it to happen, but the other is more of an overt deception where because things on the internet is associated with speed and it's associated with ease, right? Like you used to have to go to the book or the library and get a book. And if you wanted to know, like, you know, where was Ben Franklin born? It used to take you, let's say, 30 minutes to get the answer to that question. You had to go to the library, you had to check out a book, you had to show them your ID. Now you do it on your computer, you know it in 30 seconds, right? So that ease and that speed have really screwed up literally at a chemical level, at a neurological level, it's changed our neural grooving, our cognitive wiring to expect fast, easy results from the internet. And that is just not how any business is, and internet business is still real business. So I think a lot of it is just that were set at a literally a dopamine like addict level of neurochemistry were set up for disappointment on the internet on day one, because nobody's told us that. And frankly, all the gurus, all the purveyors of how-to information are scared to tell you that, because they don't want to lower your expectations, because they know that you're probably running on that same dopamine when you're buying their product in the first place. And I think that's a big part of it. I also think that for many people, starting a business is an emotional reaction to some sort of life circumstance. It's an emotional reaction to losing a job. It's an emotional reaction to hating their job. It's an emotional reaction to proving their parents wrong. It's an emotional reaction to wanting a new friend group. It's some sort of emotional driver. And that's not slow, long-burning fuel. It just isn't. You know, the emotions will subside, and then you'll have buyer's remorse or worker's remorse, or and then there's, I guess, the third component is all about insecurity and belief. Like, the reality of the internet is it's a lot like professional athletics. There's a lot of people that play basketball, but how many of them make $1 million? You know, I know one-tenth of 1% or one, that's kind of how the internet is. And partly because there's a super low barrier to entry on the internet. It's literally the barrier to entry of basketball is a playground and a ball, right? The barrier to internet on the internet, or to entry on the internet, is probably even lower than that. You don't even have to have a ball. You just have to have a phone, which everybody has anyways. So, you know, there's a saturation and a percentile issue, or it's just like statistically success is very, very limited. But I think so people see that and they start to experience that, and they get into these cultures and they get into these communities, and pretty soon they're getting pulled apart by all the crabs in the pot who are like, I took this course and I didn't get results. I made videos for, 40 days and nobody bought my products. I got, I had a hater tell me that I'm a big, fat, ugly loser and I don't want to do this anymore. And it's like you get into this world and suddenly 99.9% of your influences, who are supposed to be your peers, are actually the people that aren't getting the results that you're going after based on who you see. Because the guy that you see getting the results, he's actually probably too busy to be chatting with you in those groups. And it becomes a function of emotional, maturity. It becomes a function of discipline. It becomes a function of neurology, and it becomes a function of negative influences. And it's just like people are dead before they start.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that is what it is. And frankly, my vision in life right now is to try to change all that, but it's a big job.
100%, man. Yeah. And one thing I'm really curious about as well is, so I know your calendar is completely blocked out, right? You're a super busy guy. You've got so much stuff going on. As you say, you've got a huge business. How do you keep yourself mentally acute? And obviously, you keep in shape physically, but what do you do? Is it like diet? Do you use any kind of supplementation, nootropics?
Yeah, I take a nootropic. I take that Alpha Brain supplement that, Joe Rogan's got his name on right now. I used to take one that a buddy of mine had, but he actually ran out of supply. And frankly, I'm not convinced Alpha Brain is the best nootropic, but I'm still actively seeking. But yeah, listen, man, there've been two breakthroughs in my life that have teed up the level of success that I'm having right now. One is, and at risk of gender typing, like I'm just a simple man, like I gotta keep it simple. I can't. And so entrepreneurs do this so often. We get into so many things and we're trying to juggle all these things and learn all these things and measure all these things. And the reality for me is like, I gotta make it super simple or I'm not going to do it every day. Like, it needs to be as automatic as brushing your teeth. It needs to be as automatic as breathing. And for me, discipline. Listen, discipline is what happens when you don't feel like doing it anymore. It's like a marriage. You're not, just because it feels good doesn't mean you're committed. You're committed the day that every fiber of your being cannot stand the person. You are so angry. Then and only then do you find out if you're a committed husband. Right? You either cheat or storm out, or you stay and you keep working, right? That's how business is. So for me, it's discipline. I have extreme reverence for the Navy SEALs. I have extreme reverence for endurance athletes. I love mixed martial artists. I was never a good enough athlete to compete at those things, but I believe, musicians, I think in that same way with music, I'm really wired that way. Like, I love, to me, I very much agree that discipline is freedom. I get up at the same time every morning. I have the same routine every morning, at least Monday through Friday. I deviate some on the weekends, And I chronicled my routine in my first vlog episode called "The Day in the Life of an Entrepreneur Scaling to Nine Figures." And I just love it, man. I love it because you get the easier it is to see progress, the easier it is to feel the fulfillment of improvement. And when you're doing the same thing every single day, the progress is so easy to see because you're literally taking stock every single day. I get up, I do my vitamin prep. I have a little baggie. I put my vitamins in. I make my coffee. I listen to my audiobook. I go to the gym from the same time every morning. Then I go to my office and I still practice piano an hour a day. Then I go home and I take my daughter to the bus stop. Then I go back home and I shower and I eat some breakfast and I change and I go to the work and my calls always start at 8 a.m. And then I have a pretty specific cadence that changes Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But it's always, you know, I have a pretty set routine on each of those days. I know that I do my creation on training creation and producing more like in-depth content. I do on Monday afternoons, Wednesday mornings and Thursday mornings. Monday morning, I have all my management calls. Tuesday, I have certain calls throughout the day and I do all my interviews. Here we are on Tuesday afternoon. I do all my interviews and guest appearances on Tuesday from mid-morning to late afternoon and Wednesday later in the afternoon to end of day. And it's just like everything has been meticulously constructed to maximize what me, one dumb guy, can get done every day, every week, every month, every year. And the other thing is, I don't give a shit about a year. A year is a joke, man. People want to change their a month is too long. No, a year is too short. As I've gotten older, it's decades or nothing. I think in decade terms, because when you think in decade terms, you're going to set a goal and you're going to have to ask yourself, does that goal feel worthy of a decade? If your goal is to pay off your car loan, I mean, is that worthy of a decade? You're going to devote an entire decade of your life to paying off your car loan? People say, oh, you need bite-sized goals. Bullshit. You need goals that'll get your ass out of bed at 3:30 in the morning every single day for 3,652 consecutive days that makes up a decade. It's got to be a big goal for that. But here, you know, people think smaller goals are more achievable. I argue that. Bigger goals are more achievable. This is at the core of the 10X rule by Grant Cardone. He didn't say it this way, but this is what I took from it. Bigger goals are what you need because bigger goals will do the one thing that you need to achieve any goal, which is inspire you. You have to wake up inspired or else you won't do the work to achieve any goal. I won't even tie my shoes if I'm not inspired. But when I set out the goal with this company, with Entra, of saying, I'm going to fundamentally re-architect what it means to get educated in the modern world, with an eye towards producing entrepreneurs and value creators, because I believe that's who the future actually belongs to. I'll spend the rest of my life in pursuit of that goal, and I'll never want to take a day off.
Dude, it's 11 o'clock at night there, and you got me pumped up. I think I'm going to be working through the night.
You know, it's this or nothing, man. Everything, you know, what works for most people doesn't actually work for most people because most people wouldn't say it works.
100%. You touched on Entra there. So Entra is the coaching program that you're taking entrepreneurs through, right? And this is where you're creating your impact in the world right now. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, Entra is, I mean, that's what it is. You know, I have this is the other part. I left this out of the answer earlier about why people, you know, some succeed and others don't, is I am a big believer in living from mission, vision, and values. You know, I have become borderline deranged about the amount that I fixate on our mission, vision, and values. And I mean, you know, our mission is empowering people to achieve physical, personal, and professional excellence through entrepreneurial education. I do that on the basis of a vision. My I have a dream vision of the world is a world where an awesome life is achievable for anyone committed to excellence. And I have 10 core values that drive me toward that every day and that suffuse through my entire organization, and everybody knows them and everybody's expected to live them. And that's it, man. When you get life that simple, you don't. It does the number one thing to reduce friction in your life, which is it eliminates either the number of decisions that you have to make or the difficulty of the decisions you have to make. When you live mission, vision, and values, decisions get really easy. You know, when somebody comes to you with an opportunity to generate money, I want money. I do want money, but am I willing to do that for money? But what would the money allow me to do? But, you know, would people judge me if I did that for money? But, you know, like you have to ask all these questions. You're gridlocked. It's like 12 seconds. You haven't even made a decision. For me, one test, mission, vision, and values. Is it consistent? If yes, yes. If no, no. Simple. Done. Move on. Like that obsession with mission, vision, and values is that, you know, if it aligns with the vision that's big enough, and I just articulated the vision, a world where on where an awesome life is achievable for anyone committed to excellence. That's not the world we live in. There's 3 billion people in underdeveloped countries that don't even know what those words mean, because it doesn't matter how committed to excellence they are. They can't achieve that awesome life. I would like my life to make a dent in that by creating entrepreneurs, by empowering people to achieve physical, personal, and professional excellence, one entrepreneur at a time through entrepreneurial education. That gets me up every morning. Forgive me, I don't even remember the actual original question you asked, but you got me talking about Entre. That's Entre in a nutshell.
I love it, man. And I know that you have a free book out right now, right, where people can start to learn about these concepts and understand a bit more about you.
Yeah, and admittedly, I just did a bad job of explaining Entre. The point is, this is me, man. This is my truth. I can't be any other way than this way. This is injected into Entre, but Entre tries to start with the person who, and I don't believe in the term average person. I have rage for average, because average spells have rage minus the H. But I want to take the guy who maybe thinks about, oh, I'm the little guy. What do? How do I start? And like plug him into something that from the inside out will change how he looks at the world, but then also change what he looks at and change what tools he knows exist and change what he does to ultimately get the result. And that's what Entre does. We take people through pathways that, you know, very pragmatically deal with the reality that for most people, freedom is a pipe dream until they can generate leverage and income without control or without being controlled, right? And so we take people through that. The free book that you mentioned is called The Millionaire Shortcut. It's available at millionairesecrets.com/Dave R. We put together a landing page, especially for this episode. And you get my book, The Millionaire Shortcut. It's really quick read. It's less than 20 pages. Kind of lays out the basic framework for how I believe the average person can do, you know, even more broadly than I've described, like do what I'm describing, right? Get control, get freedom, get leverage, get out of the rat race. And then on that channel or on that landing page, you can also subscribe to my YouTube channel and my podcast as well, which are both free and full of great information.
That's awesome. Well, Jeff, thank you so much, man. This has been an absolutely incredible episode. Like hearing about your backstory, hearing about, you know, all the knowledge and wisdom that you've shared, like it's really, really generous of you. I really appreciate you spending time, man.
Yeah, this has been wonderful, man. I'm glad I got you pumped up. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so I'm rightfully pumped up too. Let's go crush it.
Absolutely, man. Let's do it.
This has been the Viral by Design podcast with Dave Rothero. For more viral marketing secrets and to get detailed cliff notes on all episodes, visit viralbydesign.net.